I'm going to call the Tax Committee to order. Representative Mahoney, I don't think we have a quorum yet, but I know you're chairing another meeting, so if we can just hear your bill. I know you have to go somewhere else, and we'll move it when we can. Representative Mahoney, your the House bill number is 1199.
1199. It is basically it's a technical bill for the Angel Investment Tax Credit. It makes some updates and closes a couple of loopholes. It has no money, but it has implications on how we administer the program.
Okay.
So with that, I would like Mr. Nelson to give a very, very brief, well, I'll give the summary. Essentially, this bill increases, many of the companies are medical device, or FDA controlled products. So sometimes it takes anywhere from, it takes almost up to 10 years to get them to market. So this extends for a certain group of companies 20 years. They can use this for up to 20 years. It prohibits investments from qualifying for credits if the business has made a public stock offering before receiving the investment. Prohibits essentially the same thing with prohibiting the businesses from receiving credible investments from making a public stock offering. And the one that I think is most important for getting this message out about this particular credit is allowing the contact information to be posted, to be given out when an investor calls and says, who is this person, where is their company, what's the phone number, I can get a hold of them, or an email. And we have not been able to, or the program has not been able to give that out. Now they can, if we pass this bill or you include it in your tax bill. Pretty simple.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Mahoney. And Mr. Nelson, nice to see you again.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jeff Nelson, I run the Angel Tax Credit Program for the Department of Employment and Economic Development. As Representative Mahoney just pointed out, his provisions in his bill cover three different areas. And very simply, one is what we call sort of anti-gaming, meaning not gaming the system provisions. Currently under the existing program, an investor, when they purchase an investment pursuant to the program, must hold that investment for 3 years. If they don't hold the investment for 3 years, they are required to pay the tax credit back. There are certain exceptions to that, however, such as if the company goes public. And what we found in a few instances is that an investor has made an investment pursuant to the program, knowing that within just a few months, the company was going to go public. So that in that regard, they are able to both collect on the credit and sell their investment and reap usually a large gain. And we want to eliminate instances like that. So those are primarily the anti-gaming provisions. The other provision that Representative Mahoney alluded to was that certain companies do work in the medical device area or the pharmaceutical area. The program currently requires that a business not be in operation for more than 10 years. However, if you are pursuing a product that requires FDA approval, we all know that that process is very lengthy and often takes 10 to 20 years. So in this bill, what the representative has proposed is allowing that companies that need to get FDA approval to be in operation for up to 20 years. And then the final provision is that currently under the statute, we aren't allowed to disclose anything about program participants other than their names. So on our website, we do list the names of all the companies. Many of the businesses and many of the investors have requested that we provide some additional contact information. So what we're proposing here is to provide the name of the company, a contact person, a phone number, an email address, an address to the company. This is nothing more than what the company already does need to disclose to the SEC, so we're not violating any provisions of the securities laws that way. One other thing I'd like to point out is that the provisions in this bill were passed by this committee last year. Of course, that were incorporated into the tax bill, which was vetoed by the governor. So all these provisions do have bipartisan support.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson.
You're welcome.
Representative Mahoney, anything else? Are there testifiers for or against this bill? Discussion from the committee? Questions? I think we all understand this one. I apologize. We still don't have a quorum. Oh. Mr. Michael is raising. We've heard that the data practices provisions are in there. And civil law is Representative Lesh?
Well, Madam Chair, let me take a look, because civil law has been getting its share of bills this year and may not necessarily. So whose assessment was this needs to go to civil law?
Madam Chair?
Greg Davis.
Madam Chair?
Representative Mahoney.
When I first brought this, introduced this bill, and I know as another chair how crazy it can get, I did bring it to a variety of the people that typically look at the data practice stuff, and they seem to be more than fine not needing it to go to civil law.
So,
Representative Lesch.
Madam Chair, the language on line 4.31 and 4.32 states that the information is public. Information is public as default under Chapter 13 already, so we're not changing anything in law. We're just providing an exemption to the to these data's privacy that comports with existing law.
Okay, Representative Lesch, I was just going to ask Representative Davids, but he's got to get to a meeting.
No, I agree with
him. Did this go to civil law last year? I don't think it did. Did it? Because I think that would comport with
it. I don't think it did.
Oh, okay. So sorry, Representative Lesch, I didn't. Okay. Trying to have him help your argument.
No, absolutely. Thank you. But yeah, we don't need to see this, Madam Chair.
Okay. Does anyone disagree with that? Okay. So if everyone's okay with that discussion, Representative Myra.
Madam Chair, Representative, on line 4.31, it talks about the name, mailing address, telephone number, et cetera. Is that the business or the personal contact information? Can you clarify that for me, please?
Could you repeat the line number? Page and line number?
It's 4.31, 4.32. It says the name and then the added language. Mailing address, telephone number, email address, contact person's right. Name, and industry type. Is that information, does that cover the business or the personal contact?
Representative Mahoney or Mr. Nelson?
Madam Chair, Representative, that covers the business. Okay. So it would be the contact person's name only. All the rest of the information is about the business.
Representative Meyer. Okay. Further questions? If not, we do have a quorum. Who are some of the big Angel Credit fans in this room? Used to be a lot of them. Does anyone want to move this bill?
Love
to. Representative Schoen would like to. Well, you're a member. I guess you're a division
I'll
now.
I'll beat that.
Representative Schoen moves this to be before us, and now we're going to lay it over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Member.
Thank you.
And Representative Marquardt, you, did you want to go next? Or I don't see Representative Green, so please.
All right.
So Representative Marquardt has two bills. Which would you like to take first? And by the way, members, Representative Hoppe contacted us and wanted his bill removed. So I know it was on the agenda, but he asked for it to come off. So Representative Marquardt, which
Thank
bill
you
would you
much,
like to
Madam
do
Chair.
First?
If we could go to 1354.
Representative Marquardt moves House Bill 1354 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and members of the committees for hearing the bill. House File 1354 actually makes some changes to the Historic Preservation Tax Credit, which was part of the Jobs Bill of 2010. And several legislators in the past, I know going back to, I think, Representative Lanning has carried this bill. And so what this does, it's what I really like about it, and a lot of folks have these historic buildings that are on the National Register of Historic Places. They're in their downtowns, and they might be dilapidated. And what this does is allow these communities to not only preserve history, but add some tax base when you rehabilitate these places, but also to increase the economy and increase jobs. And one part of the bill back in 2010 is there has to be an annual report. And what they have found in the 2 years of existence is there's been about 30 projects that have been about $536 million in actual construction costs and about 3,100 direct jobs. Not just 3,100 direct jobs. So it has been a program that's working. And so, in short, this helps preserve history while helping our economy at the same time and helping spruce up these downtown ancient, I'm not going to say ancient, historic buildings. So what this does it makes us some changes. There was a sunset in 2015. This would extend the sunset to 2021, make some technical changes, and then there's a little bit of an application fee change. So I do have a couple testifiers, Madam Chair. I've got David Kelleher, Director of Public Policy at the Minnesota Historical Society, and Doug Gasick, the Executive Director of Preservation Alliance of Minnesota. If I could turn testimony over to them, Madam Chair, that would be great.
Welcome, Mr. Kelleher. Nice to see you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm David Kelleher from the Minnesota Historical Society. Thank you for giving us an opportunity to bring this issue before you today. I'm going to just take a couple of minutes and try to answer a few questions that you may have, and we have a couple of other witnesses that will tell you a little more directly of their experience in working with this incentive. You probably are wondering, has this worked? And also, why now? Why extend the sunset now? When this bill passed in 2010, as Representative Marquardt said, you asked us, the Minnesota Historical Society, to study the economic benefits of this. We do history, so we turn to the experts at the University of Minnesota to study the economic impacts. And you have a report that looks like this in your folder that was done by the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Community Vitality. They have quantified the information from the first and second wave of projects that have taken advantage of this incentive and done their work as economists and told us and you what the benefits are. And as Representative Marquardt said, it's been very, very beneficial to the state's economy. On page four, there's an executive summary of the highlights of the benefits, and you'll see from there have been 1,400 construction jobs just in this second wave, with, as Representative Marquardt said, a cumulative total of 3,100 construction jobs. That's not including the additional benefits that are indirect and induced from these construction projects. And the total return to the state is $8 for every dollar of state dollars invested. So they've quantified a significant return to the state's economy. This has generated a great deal of activity, and their report said in total, direct, indirect, and induced, $989 million in output in Minnesota's economy. They also said in the final bullet of the executive summary that this is a conservative analysis, not including all the inputs and outputs. So we think that it's been very beneficial. Of course, our interest at the Minnesota Historical Society is preserving buildings, but it goes beyond just that with providing jobs and preserving communities, preserving the unique features of communities like Lanesboro or others that draw tourists and bring people to communities. On the why now question, this when it passed in 2010, you put a sunset on it. I think the idea of a sunset is to have us come back and tell you whether it's working or not. We, through the economic impact report, are providing information on that front, but since it expires or sunsets in 2015, why now? It takes a couple of years to gear up these projects, and one of the testifiers has worked on these projects and can tell you the complexity of putting funding together. There are sometimes dozens of funding sources, and giving developers the confidence that this incentive will be there in a couple of years will make sure that those projects continue to happen and the planning takes place so that this work will continue past the expiration date of 2015. That's the very quick overview of this, and we have some other testifiers, or I'd be happy to answer questions at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Gasick. Did you want to jump in here before we have a few people want to ask questions?
Okay.
Fire away.
Okay. I'll get to it so I can get recorded. Okay. Hi. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name's Doug Gasick, and I'm the Executive Director of the Preservation Alliance of Minnesota. And the Preservation Alliance of Minnesota is a statewide organization dedicated to encouraging the preservation of buildings and getting new uses in historic buildings. And I'm also here as a representative of the Building Jobs Coalition. We worked alongside many people to get the state historic tax credit passed in 2010 as part of the job creation bill. And preservation is a great tool to use to get more jobs on the ground. Preservation is inherently more labor-intensive than materials-intensive. So being more labor-intensive means there's going to be more construction jobs created through a preservation project than new construction. In brief, this bill is going to extend the sunset put in the original bill, just 6 more years. And what that's going to allow is the job more job-creating construction projects to begin that planning work that needs to take place. And it also gives private investors that certainty that they need to continue projects down the construction pipeline. It's really important that they have some assurity as development projects take a while to coalesce. At a time when the construction industry in Minnesota is struggling with high unemployment, this program is one of the top sources for jobs in the construction and industry since its inception. We're also really excited to see that this program is continuing to grow into new areas of the state. There's now new projects happening in Willmar, New Ulm, Burgess Falls. So there are a lot more projects happening throughout Minnesota, which is really exciting for us. And so we urge you to extend this program to 2021 so these projects can stay in the construction pipeline and new jobs can be created. And these underutilized properties will help improve the local tax base and preserve our communities at the same time. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Appreciate you being here. President Marco, did you have anyone else who wanted to testify before the three people on the list start with questions?
Madam Chair, we have two more testifiers.
Sure.
They come forward.
Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. Owen Metz with Dominium Development and Acquisition. We're a Minnesota-based apartment owner and developer. We operate in about 23 states, 23,000 apartment units, with 6,000 of those units here in the state of Minnesota. We've been working on a couple of very important projects to the state and importantly to the city of St. Paul. One of those is in Minneapolis, the Buzz Uptown Lofts. One of them is the Pillsbury A Mill, the old flour mill in the Mississippi River. And then the one I want to kind of focus on is the Schmidt Brewery, which is about 2 miles south of here on West 7th Street in St. Paul. And that project is about $122 million redevelopment that we closed on in November of last year, and it took us approximately 5 years from start to finish when we first started working on it to get to a closing date. And when that happened, obviously the city was very excited, the state was very excited, and we were very excited to bring that building back to life. And without this credit, that would not have happened. We would have had to walk away right about the time the bill was passed. And because of the complexity, these projects are more expensive than new construction. They're significantly more complicated. And saving historic buildings and landmarks like the Schmidt Brewery wouldn't happen without these types of opportunities and investments. And the investors that we've worked with on those projects like to see that there's a permanency to the bill, extending it and allowing investors to understand the nuances of the bill, how the state works, and know that this bill is going to be around and this opportunity is going to be around really drives investment and allows companies like us to continue to look at opportunities like the Pillsbury A Mill in Minneapolis as well. So it's really important that this is around. As the other testifiers mentioned, it's very labor intensive. It drives property taxes. It drives sales taxes. So it's really a statewide benefit on these projects. So I know your time is important. I'd be happy to answer any questions about our work and happy to invite any of you over to Schmidt to see the work that's being done right now. Thank you.
Is your name Mr. Mathwitz or?
Metz, M-E-T-Z.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Mr. Makarios, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Kyle Makarios with the Carpenters Union. Madam Chair, I'm here to speak in favor of this bill. And strongly encourage this committee to extend this important tax credit. As you know, this was a really big deal in 2010 when we came to the legislature in the midst of a terrible recession in the construction industry. At that time, we were in the middle of losing 50,000 Minnesota construction jobs. And the legislature passed this tax credit along with a number of other provisions that you're very familiar with, Madam Chair, and it has had a very significant impact. We lost 50,000 construction jobs, but it would have been more if you had not passed this tax credit at that point. Thousands of construction workers have been impacted by this provision. They've worked millions of work hours because of this law, and we strongly encourage you to extend it. We've got dozens of people working today at the projects like Schmidt Brewery and projects all over the state. This has been, and construction remains, you know, in the 15% unemployment rate, right? We're still somewhere like three times higher than the state average. So we need more action, and this is an important provision. I encourage you to extend this tax credit.
Thank you. Welcome, Mr. Herman.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Herman. I'm a lawyer in the real estate group at Fagree Baker Daniels. I wanted to take a slightly different approach in terms of telling the committee about the success of the bill and the particular program that was created by the legislature with the 90-cent grant as the alternative to the credit. The chair and a number of other people on the bill originally were concerned that we not end up like some of the other states around the country where the credit is offered but the project only gets 50 cents or 70 cents. And because of the unique flexibility that we have in the legislation allowing the credit to be assigned and making it refundable in addition to being a credit only if you have income, we've been getting pricing on these credits from investors in the marketplace in the last several rounds of projects that we've done in the 93 to 94 cent range, so substantially better than the grant alternative. And I think it shows that having a more flexible program, there's a little bit of tinkering in the bill to make that clearer in terms of how it works, has actually been a very, very successful tool. In our office, I would say that we are seeing this credit being used not only for just historical renovations, but frequently paired with the low-income housing tax credit to make low-income housing projects viable. And so I think that in that regard, it is saving money someplace else in the low-income subsidy system. And it has the unique effect of attracting a lot more federal historic credit dollars to Minnesota. We were a very low-performing state. I would say our office was doing considerably more work in Missouri and Iowa on historic renovation development deals until this passed. And so those states were attracting the federal investment. Now we're getting, I think, our fair share of it. And so overall, it's not only been a terrific project generator in this period when there has been obviously not very much going on in construction, but it is the multiplier is much better because you attract the federal dollars in a way that we simply weren't doing in Minnesota before. So I, too, would join in urging that the bill be extended for a reasonable period of time, and I think it'll, even though I know we don't do this, I think it really has had the kind of multiplier or what you call it, where you consider the benefit in the tax return from making more things happen. I know we don't do that in our budgeting, but I think it's actually proven that it does have that effect.
Thank you. Herman. Okay, so unless there's someone else, we have Representative Loon Loeffler Davids. Representative Loon.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Marquardt. I just had a question about the fee, which is blank in the bill, and if you could give us some sense of you know, if there's something in mind there, or if there's been a reason that the up to $5,000 has appeared to be inadequate to cover some of the expenditures with regards to, you know, all the paperwork and that associated with the program.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Loon, and that's exactly right, and I'll have Mr. Kelleher explain that, but I think the max is at $5,000, but they have some of these multi-million complicated projects that simply the application isn't covering the cost, but let Mr. Kelleher come.
Madam Chair, Representative Loon, that's exactly right. When the bill passed in 2010, you authorized us, the Minnesota Historical Society, to collect a fee. We have found that the amount of fees that are collected are not keeping up with our costs of administering this program. Some of these projects take hours and hours, and in some cases the larger projects We quantified one project, took 560 hours of staff time to review the project. They're extremely complicated. They have to meet standards, historic preservation standards. So we want to just make sure that we're not subsidizing this program out of our general fund appropriation that's really meant for other things. As far as what we would like to see filled in the blank, what other states, including Iowa and Missouri, have had is a 0.5% of the qualified rehabilitation expenditures, or a cap that would be something on the order of $35,000 or $45,000. And I know that that might give you sticker shock. It kind of gave me sticker shock when I first heard that number. But that really is comparable to the building inspection fees that are required of buildings that happen with local building inspections.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Mr. Kelleher, you know, I know the current authorization is up to $5,000, but have virtually all of the projects been required to have a $5,000 fee? So you're really bumping up against that cap on in every instance? Or,
Madam Chair, Representative Loon, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but there have been a small number of large projects, a small number of small projects, and then a bunch that are in the middle. So I would say that it's a small number of projects that have bumped up against the $5,000 fee, but those are the ones that take the most amount of time to review.
Thank you. And just finally, so you provided a couple of examples of other ways that other states have done it. I mean, do you have a preference or have one that you think would be most suited to the projects you're seeing in Minnesota?
Mr. Kelleher.
Madam Chair, Representative Loon, probably the most flexible way would be to just set a dollar amount such as up to $45,000, something like that, would give the State Historic Preservation Office flexibility to set a fee schedule to make sure that they are able to do the work without delays in the reviews.
Thank you. And I just wondered if any of the other people who testified, maybe any of the developers or people doing the projects, have a perspective on that.
Please.
Owen with Dominium again, Madam Chair, Representative. I think the flexibility of having a percentage with a up to cap is probably the best. Schmidt Brewery, I think, is the one that they're saying took the 560 hours or whatever. They're very, very complicated. I think we're up to 19 amendments on Schmidt Brewery right now that we've submitted through the state. We'll probably have another 10 to 15, so it really does take a lot of staff time to get through these.
Don't trip over that chair. Thank you, Representative Loon.
Thank you.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to represent Marquardt and the people who've been implementing this program, it's really impressive, and I think it's a good way to provide solid, steady jobs on a consistent basis because there's plenty of wonderful old gems in every community that ought to be preserved. I didn't see, though, in this wonderful economic impact, anything about the choice between the grant versus the credit. What have we learned? We kind of put both in to kind of see what the market reacted to, and did we learn anything about that?
Mr. Keller.
Madam Chair, Representative Loeffler, to date, I think most of the projects have used the credit. We have not had a large number that have actually been paid out because it takes some time to do these. So there's not a long track record in the experience of developers or the Minnesota Historical Society in doing that. It certainly makes it a little bit more complicated. Rather than just saying a straight credit, but as Mr. Herman testified, it does give some flexibility for the developers to decide what makes the most economic sense for them to put their arrangements together. But there's not a huge track record yet in determining that.
Great. Well, the other thing, and we don't have to get into the discussion of it, but I'd be interested in following up with Mr. Herman and others who know more the finance end. How can we make this even a bigger win by having the investments come from Minnesotans as opposed to national investments? I think people would really feel a sense of pride in investing in a portfolio of preservation projects in Minnesota. And in this market, I know there's a lot of people who would think a secure 6 or 7% return on investment would be very attractive. And so I don't know enough about that market yet to understand exactly how it trades, but I would really like to see it stay within our communities as well.
Thank you. Representative Davids, and Representative Davids, you've authored this bill in the past, haven't you, over the years?
I think we had it, plus I think Representative Hoppe had one, and that was part of my question, Madam Chair, maybe to Ms. Manzi. We had on the agenda the Marquardt bill, which I'm very supportive of, and also the Hoppe bill. Ms. Manzi, how do those two differ? Because I remember Representative Hoppe had in his bill some things, did some good things for some folks, and I think St. Paul, if I remember correctly. Ms. Manzi, what are the difference between the two, or are they pretty much the same?
Madam Chair, Representative Davids, a significant difference between the two bills had to do with the way in which they amended the effective date of the original law. I don't think anyone has addressed this issue as yet in the discussion of this bill. See what section it is. Section 6 of House Bill 1354 amends the effective date of the original law from 2010. The way it's amended in Representative Marquardt's bill would go back and allow the credit for rehabilitation expenses that were paid after May 1st for a project for which an application was received in the proper time, even if there were contracts entered into for that project before May 1st. Representative Hoppe's bill was a little more generous with regard to projects in that category, and it would have allowed the credit going back for all rehabilitation expenses of a project that for which there had been an application submitted after May 1st, before the project was placed in service, including those rehabilitation expenses that were paid before May 1st, 2010. So had that bill had a revenue estimate prepared, I suspect that the first year cost for that item would have been larger than what's shown in the fiscal 14 cost for House File 1354.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Marquardt, thanks for bringing this forward. Yeah.
Thank you.
And I think Representative Davids just is raising a good issue. If this proceeds, I'm sure you're all working with Representative Hoppe as well. I'm not sure why he decided to have a poll today, but, there's a myriad of levers you can pull for all these different parts of the bill. And if somewhere, well, we would like that it to be bipartisanly supported if possible. Yeah. Mr. Kelleher.
Madam Chair, Representative Davids, the language that's in House File 1354, Representative Marquardt's bill, is the language that was in the omnibus tax bill last year that we worked on quite a bit and compromised on and agreed upon. So that language is carried forward into the Marquardt bill.
Madam Chair, that was in the smoking hot tax bill.
Correct. Representative Davids.
Because the governor actually has signed some of my stuff, just not that one.
Thank you. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you tell me what has, and I don't know if Representative Marquardt, if you know this or not, but can you tell me what has been the largest tax credit received and the smallest tax credit received under this program? Do you know that, or does staff
Madam
know that,
Chair,
perhaps?
Representative Anderson, maybe Mr. Kelleher would. I don't know that.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, I don't have that number right in front of me, but the largest credit that we have in the pipeline is in excess of $10 million, and it's 20% of the qualified rehabilitation cost. The smallest one, I believe, is a project that is under $100,000. I don't have, again, the exact figure in front of me, but we want to encourage those smaller projects to move forward across the state so that they can, as Representative Marquardt said, develop on the main streets and of the small towns in the state. So there's always going to be a range of the big projects and the little projects, but we want to nurture the smaller ones as well.
Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, Mr. Anderson, too, if my concern is to make sure when you're talking about the fee that's in the bill, that we aren't creating a fee that is a deterrent to participation in that, and I'm assuming that you base it on the scale of the project. And I think you said that to Representative Loon, but I'm not sure.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, the language in current law makes a reference that it's based on estimated qualified rehabilitation expenditures. So it would be tied to the size of the project. And on your first point, we, like I said, we want to nurture the smaller projects. We don't want to have a fee be a barrier. And for the really small ones, we may even waive the fee, but we'll set up a fee schedule based on what you put in the law.
Representative Anderson, further questions, further discussion? If not, we're going to lay this over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for
being
here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
And Representative Marquardt, you have another bill, and we should talk about the fact that members don't have it on their agenda, and if people can pass it out. I think Representative Marquardt is going to fess up here to a little error.
Yeah, Madam Chair.
And I want to apologize because I just told Representative Davids now. This came to us very late, and we did, Ms. Jensen tried to make contact, but found out that we didn't. It's just a voicemail, Mr. Rubis, when you get back to your office. So we're sorry about that. So the way I understand it, Representative Marquardt, is you sent a bill here that wasn't supposed to come here. And it's it made deadline in K-12, but has to go to Ways and Means. So, yes. Representative Marquardt, we're getting it passed out right now.
Well, Madam Chair and members, if you remember when you were young and you accidentally threw that baseball or kicked that kickball into the ornery neighbor's yard, and you ran over the fence and grabbed that ball and ran back to your yard, that's what this representative is doing today. Except this isn't the ornery neighbor's place we're in here.
That was a bit harsh.
So what this House File 1041, which is obsolete education language, is being dropped, was erroneously sent here to the Tax Committee. And it needs to meet deadline, and what I would like it to do is to be sent out of here to the Ways and Means Committee. It already was heard in Education Finance and moved on, and it's here in the Tax Committee, and it really, as we found out, should not have been there. So Madam Chair, I'm totally at the disposal here. I mean, you want to move it forward or not, it's entirely up to the members. It's
To get it before us, I think we need a motion, Representative Marker, to put House File 1041 before us for a potential vote to have it leave us. Representative Davids.
I'd say let's make the motion, get it out of here.
Okay, so Representative Davids amends the motion so it would go to Ways and Means. Just to be on the record here so everyone knows what's happening. Mr. Michael or Ms. Manzi or anybody, are there any tax items in here that we have to see? We believe it's here in error. So if someone could let us know.
Madam Chair, the provision, essentially, this bill is just eliminating obsolete provisions that relate to payment of tuition, so it doesn't relate to taxes.
Okay, discussion. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Marquardt, is it really an accident that this bill is here?
Representative Garofalo, there certainly, you know, there might be wheels or tires on something like this potentially, but I don't think it was supposed to come here. I mean, that was, I don't think that was the initial intent.
Representative Garofalo,
but I'm being honest with where this bill may be going.
Representative Garofalo, I asked the same thing. I think Representative Marquardt had intended a couple different vehicles.
Yeah, okay. So
and I think those are still moving.
Okay, so just to be clear, is this potentially could be the education bill that went through the Tax Committee? I'm shocked because I didn't do
it.
When I was chair of the Education Finance Committee, I didn't
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, I'm merely trying to get that baseball I hit over the fence into that ornery neighbor's yard and trying to bring it back so I can play some more with baseball for the rest of the
session.
Representative Garofalo raises a good point, and Representative Marquardt.
Madam Chair, my recollection.
Former K-12 chair, you know, I mean, really, we don't want Representative Marquardt's K-12 bill to not come here. It's got tax provisions, so I don't think any of us are going to let that happen. So, Representative Garofalo.
Well, Madam Chair, there's a pretty good chance that'll happen, but that's okay, besides the fact. But,
Madam,
as long as you guys, it's on the up and up and everyone knows what's going on.
Madam Chair and Representative Garofalo, and Chair Lincheski, that our education omnibus finance bill will be coming through this committee. I will guarantee you that.
Madam Chair.
Representative Garofalo,
and Representative Marquardt, your first education bill might do that. Just thinking ahead. I mean, are you promising that if there's a second education bill that'll go through the Tax Committee?
Madam Chair and Representative Garofalo, I don't know for sure. I'm going to tell you because I don't know for sure. This is my first time around as a chair of this committee, and I know our omnibus bill that passes out in April will for sure. I don't know for sure what the status of this bill will be.
Representative Garofalo?
Yeah.
I'm really glad you're raising this because we have to be so vigilant compared with the Senate here. I mean, the issue is, you know, we shouldn't have a vetoed K-12 bill this year. It would seem kind of, you know, one team's in charge. I hope he doesn't need a vehicle. I hope he's not going to have a vetoed K-12 bill. But the reason I'm glad you're raising that is, you know, we have a problem already that's coming that this committee has to care about, which is if you watch the bill introductions in the Senate and you watch the bill introductions in the House and you watch where they're going, and I know, you know, Stephen or Mr. Rubis would know this, and you know the partisan staff who follows this stuff, and Representative Davids knows this. The Senate is doing a lot of education, finance, and taxes. The House is doing education, finance, and education. And generally, both parties have run it this way. Representative Garofalo, you had your bill come through Representative Davids' committee. You know, the House kind of does it that way and monitors the K-12 committee so they're not raising property taxes when the tax committee is busy cutting property taxes. But the Senate, and we don't know this, but they're handling their bills very differently, and I think it's going to be a problem for all of us if the Senate Tax Committee is going to be running the K-12 committee over there. And I think we're just all bipartisanly going to have to stay on that, and I don't know what they're going to do, but I'm just watching which chairs are hearing which bills, and I think it's a concern. Representative Garofalo.
Yeah, and Madam Chair, and again, I mean, you guys are in charge, and you guys are going to make this decision, and if the DFL majority is okay with the tax committee being bypassed, the Republican minority can't do anything about it. That's a decision you guys have to make. I would just highlight to members, I highlighted this in the property tax division last night. Back in 2009, this happened to Representative Greiling, where there were provisions put into the tax bill that had impacts on the education side of things. And if you're all okay with that, if that's fine, then go ahead. But when Representative Moline and Representative Anzels have their Iron Range bills with taconite and you want to check out and not look at it, realize that there are education appropriation connotations that happen from that. That goes on, and if you guys are cool with it, that's your choice. But just for God's sakes, at least just be aware of what's going on in the interactions that are taking place.
Well, and I think, if I may, Representative Marquardt, I think that's exactly right, and you're very well aware of that as a former property tax chair. At the end of the day, both bodies have to pick which committee is going to have the final say, and it's going to be one of the two. And you can make a good argument that K-12 levy kind of situations belong in either one. The House has historically had taxes kind of trump that K-12 move, as you've just recognized with Representative Greiling. It was this committee that got the say-so rather than the K-12 committee. The Senate, we're just not sure. And at the end, the big three leaders, you know, Dayton, Thiessen, and Bach, have to line up which account is going to be done in which, and this speaker's done it as well, which account is going to sit in which conference committee. So that'll be kind of out of our bailiwick because the three will do it. But this committee should fight for its purview is what I'm saying. And I expect you, Representative Marquardt, to fight for yours. And so that's where the collision will be. What's different is the Senate is puzzling to me as to what approach they're taking, and I'm just not sure. I've not seen it happening like that in the Senate in the past. Representative Garofalo.
Yeah, I'm happy to translate for you and tell you what's going on over there.
I mean, please.
No, I mean, what's going to happen is you're exactly right. They're going to run everything. Senator Scoy is going to run everything through taxes. And Senator Wieger, I mean, he's new to the committee, and education finance is an extremely complex area. That's exactly what's going on, and it's not an accident. So as long as you guys understand what could potentially happen here, and you're all on board with it, I don't have any say in it. It's up to you. Just be informed. Understand.
And just to, you know, Representative Marquardt, if you want to comment, I mean, I think that's the typical thing, and that empowers this committee. So what Representative Garofalo just said is good for the tax committee, not so good for the K-12 committee. And Representative Marquardt and I have been talking about this a lot, and sort of how conferees will be chosen at the end of the day, depending on where accounts get held, and the House may want to do something a little differently than it's done in the past. So, Representative Marquardt?
No, I have no. I appreciate Representative Garofalo's comments, and I appreciate the committee here being very lenient and kind.
Further questions or comments? If not, we'll send this on the Davids motion off to Ways and Means. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. And the bill is off to Ways and Means.
Madam,
thank you,
Madam Chair, members. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And Representative Green, he's been in and out of the room. There he is. Thank you. And Representative Green, do we have possession of your bill?
We actually have possession of your bill.
Okay, good. So, Representative Green, when we talked on the House floor, I think at that time we did not have possession of your bill. Okay, we do not have possession of this bill, members. It's in jobs, okay? So we want them to get it to us, but Representative Green talked to me about this issue, and he wanted us to hear it. So in trying to figure out how we would do that, we're going to have an informational hearing on this because we can't move it and lay it over until we get possession of it. And I believe it's in Representative Mahoney's committee. Unless somebody wants to correct me on that, that's where we understand. Is Stevens nodding? Yes. So we did want to get Representative Green ahead of us to hear his thoughts on the Small Business Investment Tax Credit. So welcome. I appreciate you being here.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. And I will apologize to everybody if I seem a little bit not ready for this meeting. It's because I did not get your notice that it was even going to get a hearing until just a few minutes ago. So, I'll just give you a little overview of it. It doesn't really change a whole lot in the tax credit. What it basically does, it moves a little more of the percentages to the greater Minnesota area. And you know, we do have a lot of people that want to take advantage of this, and a lot of it does go to the metro, and like in some of our small towns that are really hurting, this would be a huge benefit to them, you know. And I, when I first got this, I will tell you that I'm generally not in favor of this kind of stuff. So what I did was I talked to businessmen who actually do the investing in the program. And the small businessmen who are able to invest in these tax credits really like them. They see no competition with themselves whatsoever, and that was my big concern. If we're going to be funding someone who's going to be in competition with the small business we already have, they don't see it that way. It's a way to allow someone who probably doesn't have access to funds through banks or other things because they're a startup, and these guys are willing to take a chance with their money, and what they're asking for is just a little bit of a tax credit while that money's being invested. And this would move a percentage of 30% to 40% to the greater Minnesota area.
Okay, well, Representative Green did an excellent job for not knowing your bill was up, and as a person who's probably not had a bill heard in this committee yet, that was excellent. I think members and Representative Davids may want to jump in here. He's your second author, and the committee is very aware of this program. But I think what Representative Green has mentioned is, if you look on the House summary, it's really, but I think it's the first bullet that really is directing the change in the tax to assist greater Minnesota. Representative Davids, did you want to comment on this bill as well? You are the second author, Representative Davids, so I think...
I usually don't read bills until committee, Madam Chair. I'd have to study a little further. Okay. I have no comment at this time.
Okay, and so...
I'm on it, so I'm sure it's good.
Yes. Representative Dabney?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are you allowing questions today on... How are we handling
it? Yes. We don't have, you know, we just don't have the bill before us, but when he gets here, we'll lay it over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Green, first of all, to the language, when I read the language on, do you have a copy of the bill in front of you? Let's make sure you do first.
Yes, I do.
Okay, good deal.
I can and see miss, it in small print.
Representative Green, Ms. Manzi is more than happy to... fill in for you here if we all do that in taxes. We ask the staff, just so you know.
All right, thank you.
Representative Dabney.
Page 4, line 29, a target goal that a minimum of 30% of the credit will be awarded for those investments, 4.9, 4.30. I've had a target of losing 10 pounds for a number of years now.
I haven't.
Is it and I continue to. Is it a target, or is it a requirement?
Madam Chair and Representative, please. I think at this point it's a targeted goal, and it's I don't know how you would require it. You know, it depends on who is investing and what's out there to invest in. So it's what we'll be looking to reach. Just like you, if you want to lose weight and you don't, you still have the same target. So that's what we're shooting for.
Representative Dabney.
So when this program was established, there was a lot of discussion about, do we allow the market to determine the distribution of these credits? Or do we set up fences and say, by congressional district, by some definition of greater Minnesota versus the metro area, by, you know, whatever, geography, and make sure that a certain percentage of the credits go to one area and or another? Or do we let the market decide? So there was kind of government knows best, market knows best. I'm still unclear on your language. I'm good on a goal. I've been good on my goal for losing weight for years now. Is it a requirement that 30% go to greater Minnesota? And if the market doesn't work in that respect, then the next year 40% has to? Or is it a goal that this is what we'd all like to see happen?
I think the way that when this went in, and I will tell you that I was approached to do this, mm-hmm. and that's the first that I had dug into it.
All good.
And the way it's explained to me is that right now these, I believe, are done on a competitive basis. And if you've got, I'm just going to throw numbers out for an example. Say you've got 500 people in the metro area applying for grants, you may only have 15 in one particular city in the rural area applying for the grants. And so what I'm hoping this will do is that it may, Representative, give us an idea if there is that need out there also, but basically it's giving the rural areas a little bit more of a chance to compete.
And Representative Dabney, may I, Representative Green, if Ms. Manzi could jump in on this a little bit, I think to the language that would help.
Thank
Ms. Manzi, could you comment on the language?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think that the 30% is a goal with a consequence if it's not met. So the way the language reads is that there's the 30% goal put in place, and the Commissioner of Deed is directed to develop a plan to reach the 30% of credits being awarded in greater Minnesota. If that goal is not achieved during the second half of calendar year 2014, then in calendar year 2015, the rate of the credit would increase for investments in businesses in greater Minnesota from the 25% in current law to 40%. So that would be a greater incentive for investors to choose qualified small businesses in greater Minnesota, because they would get a bigger return on their investment in terms of the credit. The commissioner would continue to monitor what percentage of investments go to greater Minnesota, and if it had reached the 30% goal, then it wouldn't go up to the 40% rate. And if it ever failed to reach the 30%, then it would go to the 40% in the next calendar year. So it's a little bit more than just saying that there's a goal to achieve this, but there's a consequence and an action if the goal is not met.
Representative Dabney?
One last question for us. Representative Green, by all means, weigh in, but I'll ask the staff for starters. Okay. Ms. Manzi, when we discuss the definition of greater Minnesota or metro area and the like in this area, if I have a business idea that I've been incubating in the metro area, and I'm at a point where the angel investor tax credit would make sense, I'm having the conversation with the investors, they're ready to put the money in, but they want me to move to greater Minnesota because they'll get a 40% potentially under here return rather than a 25%. Am I a greater Minnesota company if I move from Bloomington to Belle Plaine to start up the business then, or do I have to have started in...
Where are you from?
I'm from Fauston.
Do I have to have started in Fauston?
Ms. Manzi.
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, I believe that Belle Plaine is within the Seven County metro area, so moving there...
Babbitt.
Okay. Moving to Fauston or Babbitt, you would have to move your headquarters, and you would have to move at least 51% of your employees and payroll to that location outside the metro area to obtain the higher rate.
Okay.
And Madam Chair, I just want to add, I missed a point on the rate of the credit moving up if the 30% weren't met. The other thing that the bill does is once the 30% is met, then the rate of the credit in greater Minnesota would drop back down from 40% to 25% in the next year, and the commissioner would continue monitoring it to see if 30% of the investments were going to greater Minnesota. If they weren't in a calendar year, then in the next year it would go up to 40%. If the 30% was then met, then it would come back down to 25% in the following year.
Okay, Representative Davids. Okay. Yeah, sure. Okay, Representative Davids.
Thank you, and thank you, Representative Davids, for that. I dug into this a little bit more, and this, and I hate saying this all the time, but this was in the smoking hot tax bill as somewhat of a compromise between some rural legislators and some metro legislators. Oh. This was the language that came out, and so this has been passed into a final omnibus bill before, and so now it's back before us here again. So just a little history on that.
Okay, thanks for that. That helps. Thank you, Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and to Ms. Representative Green and to the members. I'm just going to make a comment that I think we have to just I've really been impressed with the Tax Committee when we analyze the impacts of what we do. We look at the state with all of its complexity, and the LGA runs that we've seen show that it isn't, you know, plain vanilla in any part of the state. There's a lot of variety, and we were just told, because it was Mankato Day this week, that they're the fastest growing economy in Minnesota. And in the metro, we have areas that are charging ahead and some that are just stagnating. And that's the same in greater Minnesota as well. And I think on programs like this, we either ought to just let the market figure out where the investors, who in theory are the, you know, they're putting their own money on the line, we're just kind of hedging their bet a little bit. You know, let them make the choices, or else we have to figure out if we're going to use it as economic development rather than just, you know, spurring the growth of new industries that we hope will be the next Medtronic or 3M or you know, Hormel or whatever, that we really ought to look at then targeting the areas that really need that reinvestment and opportunities created, because it really is, in all of Minnesota, we have so much diversity and so much need, and I just feel like this one, to me, was an investment in letting wise people who we hope know more about business than I do, making choices that they'd find the best and fastest horses and not worry so much about which pasture they're in. So I think we need to think about if we're going to start breaking up the state even more and more regularly, that we maybe think about targeting it. I don't know.
Thank you. Representative Anderson. Okay. Unless there are other questions, was there someone else? No. Okay. Or would you like to testify, please, for or against this bill? Come on up. And just so you know, members, what we're doing here is this bill is getting its hearing so that later, Representative Green, if members are interested in this bill, when it gets here, we'll just formally move it and lay it over, but you will have had a hearing, so no one will accuse you on the floor of not had a hearing in taxes. So that's what we're doing here now. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, committee members. When I woke up this morning, I didn't know of this meeting, so I didn't dress for it, but here I am. My name is John Goley. I am chairman of the board of a startup that had been funded by the Minnesota Tax Angel Program. It's called Hilux. We're an emerging growth company, and we make lights. And you could use new lights in this room. They're different colors. So I'm putting you on my prospect list. We make light emitters that basically go into these lights right here. It's a Minnesota-based company. We are manufacturing the light products in Minnesota, and it has a global reach. This is my fifth startup. That makes me old, almost older than almost anyone here. Graduated from the University of Minnesota in 1966. So what I'm about to say, I say as a Minnesotan. I've lived here all my life. I've paid taxes here all my life. And this is the fifth business that I've started. So it's fair to say I have some perspective as to how to start businesses and what incentivize businesses to locate in certain areas. Before I do that, I want to do something else. I have not testified before the Minnesota legislators before, so I want to take some time to thank the people in this room for serving. I think as a nation, we do a pretty good job now of thanking our warriors that come home who protect our liberties and democracy. I think we do a lesser job of protecting the people on the ground that sit in dark rooms like this and grind it out every day. So from me to you, thank you for that. What I really want to comment today is on this tax credit amendment, and I'm going to encourage you to amend the amendment and treat everyone the same. And I want to tell you why I think that that's important. I'm an entrepreneur, I'm a business person, I'm an investor, and I'm a longtime business person. I'm going to tell you that I deal with business people and have all my life. We do not locate businesses as a result of what type of tax credit we're going to get. We locate businesses because of where we live, the types of facilities available, the types of help personnel that are there, and of course the access to capital. But capital moves according to the business. And just because you might fund a business in Belle Plaine, even if it's in the metro area, it doesn't mean it stays in Belle Plaine. We're located in Eden Prairie. In 2012, we generated a $500,000 investment that we would not have gotten if it hadn't been for the 25% tax credit by a Minnesota investor, a very wealthy investor. That $500,000 grew legs, and it spread through purchases that we made throughout Minnesota. This last Tuesday, we were in Fergus Falls negotiating with a manufacturer up there to make our light product that will soon be in your ceiling. And if they agree to do this, that facility, according to the owner there, will probably put on a 10,000 square foot addition. We were up there with the economic development person who has additional funds to do this, so there's already incentives to do this. But these dollars are going to flow into rural communities, even if they're invested in Minnesota, or I would say vice versa. You put them in Fergus Falls and they come back and they get invested back into Minnesota. So the point I want to make is I know it's well-intentioned. I know that there's reason to stimulate economies like Fergus Falls and other areas, but I'm going to encourage you to make legislation as simple and as easy to administer as you can. And every time you put another hickey on this thing, one more thing that you have to look at, one more thing that you have to do, with all due respect, you encumber not only the legislation and the administration of it, but for guys like me on the outside of this, it's one more thing I have to look at, one more thing I have to attend to, and it's not meeting the objective, in my opinion. So I would suggest to you that whatever you come up with, and we're no longer affected by this because we have our money, we're on our way, so I'm not trying to say this from a self-serving point of view, I say this as a concerned citizen point of view. Whatever you do, understand that we as business people every day, we're risk takers, we're out there, we do not make decisions based upon tax incentives. It is helpful to us, but that's not going to drive where we put the business down. There's spillover to all of this investment, and that's the message I want to give to you. Make your legislation, make your tax proposals simple, let them be administered in a simple way, and let us, as business people, the receivers of this, understand them clearly. So I'll end where I began by thanking you for serving, so you could go home to your significant others tonight when you're late and whatever and say, hey, someone actually thanked me for being late. So for me to you, thank you for that, and I appreciate your attention today.
Thank you for being here, and thank you for your testimony. We appreciate it.
Can we put him down every day,
Matt? Yes, yeah. Right.
It's really good and nice.
Is there anyone else who'd like to testify for or against this bill?
Yeah.
Okay, anybody else from the committee? If not, Representative Green, we will do what we said, which is get the bill. When we get the bill, we will move it and lay it over. And I'm certain Representative Davids will make sure I don't forget. So we really appreciate you being here and sharing with us your thoughts on how to improve the Angel Investment Credits.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee members.
Thank you.
Appreciate you having me.
Is there anything else, members? Not. We are going to adjourn. Okay, we are adjourned. Thank you.